Welcome to Average Meeple, where average people talk about games. My name's James.
I'm Cora.
I'm Grant.
And, yes, this is episode one of our first podcast, so, you know, we want to talk about games, maybe do some game reviews. What would you like to talk about, Cora?
I think it would be really good to kind of do a little bit more of a deep dive into just the world of games. You know, I kind of try and keep up with the board game subreddit, but I know there's a lot more content out there. Just learning about the board game business in general, I think, would be also really interesting. Learning more about publishers and just how games are made.
I just want to learn more about what frustrates people in games, what makes them hate games, why games suck, and et cetera.
And then exploit that to make it easier for you to win.
I guess so.
Like Cora said, I think, you know, it'd be fun to do some dives into some, you know, yeah, board game design work. Publishing would be interesting, but also I think I'd like to send out some polls and maybe, you know, on Board Game Reddit or on Board Game Geek or something, and just see what opinions are, various things. Anywho, so yeah, so just kind of introduce ourselves a little bit better. I thought we might talk about sort of how we got into games, you know, when we first realized that there's more out there than, you know, Monopoly and Trouble. So Cora, how about you? When did you first venture into the real world of games?
Yeah, so I mean, growing up, like most people, I played Monopoly, Trouble, you know, all those basic Milton Bradley Hasbro games. And it wasn't really until college that I realized that there was more than that. James and a couple of our friends from college, you know, enjoyed board games when they were in high school and younger. And so we had a board game night at our student union. James would bring us down there, and I think the first ever Euro game, like most people, the gateway game, Settlers of Catan, was really the first real exposure I had to gaming beyond Monopoly, and we played it a lot. And then we kind of got into some of the other more simple Euro games like Ticket to Ride, and then after college, we lived with James's brother, and we got even into more heavy games, it's kind of just been that way ever since. We've just always been playing games. I mean, started our collection and have gone from there. Introduced a lot of other people too.
I've got the youngin over here, Grant.
Yeah, I'm still like fetal in my board game career. I grew up in California, so I wasn't in like the hinterlands in the snow, trapped inside playing board games like James every day. I was outside doing stuff, living life. But for me, it was mostly Risk. Played a ton of Risk, but I had a little sister who's 4.5 years younger, so it was, every game was one-sided. So you could play a game for enough time until she got so frustrated she refused to ever play again. Which was Risk, Monopoly, Trouble, Sorry, Candyland. You know, all the normal games.
Takes a lot of skill to be good at Candyland.
Yeah, it's impressive to lose Candyland every time, even though it's random. And now, I really just started playing a lot of games since I, you know, started knowing these guys. And yeah, the whole world of gaming is just starting to open its eyes to me.
For me, it started when I was probably a teenager. My brother's a few years older than I am, and he went off to college, and we would come back on, you know, typical Christmas break, summer break, whatever, and he'd always bring back a game or two with him, and, you know, we're not quite outdoorsy people, so we...
understatement.
Understatement. So, you know, we stayed in, we played a lot of games, which is what we did, especially over Christmas when I grew up with... in northwestern Pennsylvania, where we get lots of snow and it's cold and there's no reason to go outside. So Christmas break was always big for games. And, yeah, you know, I mean, started out, like most, to, you know, venturing into Catan. But, you know, you can only play so many games of that before you just can't do it anymore. And, you know, Puerto Rico was a big one back then. We played a lot. But, like I say, pretty much every year my brother would bring back a couple new games. And, you know, we play a lot of those. Just kind of been... growing the collection ever since, I guess. My brother owns a lot of games. We're starting to get a pretty good collection here, so... Yeah. Alright, so let's talk about our top three games. I think what we'll do is we'll do a 3-3 game countdown. And we'll start with Grant. Grant, what is your number three game?
James and I talked about this morning, and I have to say my number three game right now is probably Istanbul.
Number three game, Istanbul? Alright.
That's a good one.
Alright. What does he like about Istanbul?
No, I really like games that you can think like two or three turns ahead, but there's not a lot of randomness. Like you know kind of what's going to happen, and you can really like plan ahead, and you can take into account like what other players might want to do without like super meta strategies and having to play the game like 50 times.
Okay, yeah. All right, Cora, number three game.
Number three. You know, I think it's probably going to be the a toss-up between the Forbidden games. I really like the co-op style. Forbidden Desert is probably my favorite. I think we've just gotten the most replayability out of it. You know, you'll hear as we go on in this series about how much I just prefer co-op games in general. It's got a good level of strategy along with a good level of randomness. It really makes you have to be adaptable to the situation because you really don't know what your next turn is going to be. I mean, it's very for people who are familiar with Pandemic. I mean, it's very similar game style, and I just have not gotten tired of that type of game. So, and we've been playing Forbidden Sky recently, which has also been pretty cool. I really like a lot of the game pieces in that game.
It's got a good feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I should mention is I love playing new games, and I just played a game recently called Teotihuacan. This is all a segue into my number three. I'm sorry, were you done with your number three?
Yeah.
My number three, game called Teotihuacan, and full name is Teotihuacan, City of the Gods, or City of Gods maybe, but anyways, yeah, It's a game that came out, I think, last year, and it's just a bit more in-depth game. We tend to play a lot of shorter games, I guess, you know, hour, you know, or less, and this was a good, you know, 2 hour long Euro-style game, and I've only played it once, but I really enjoyed it, and had a lot of fun. All right, number two. We'll go back to Cora this time. Your number two game.
Number two. I know it's a party game, but I'm not going to say Happy Salmon, although I do love that game.
It's going to be Trivial Pursuit.
No, it's not going to be Trivial Pursuit either.
Shut this podcast off right now. Happy Salmon is your number two game.
No. It's been Codenames. I really do like Codenames a lot. I recently got the game Decrypto from James for Christmas, and we've played that a couple times, and I could definitely see that kind of eclipsing Codenames. It has a similar feel to it, and I think there's some really interesting mechanics to it. I think they both kind of fall in the same vein, and I'm kind of saying more than one game for all of these right now. But I would say Codenames. I think again, it's a game that I can play a whole bunch of times. I've introduced a lot of people to it. Everyone seems to really like it. So I think I get the most enjoyment out of games when I can introduce them to people and they enjoy them too. When everybody's enjoying themselves, I enjoy myself.
Oh, yeah. I like games where somebody's really not enjoying themselves. But, like, my number two probably right now is Civilization. We've only played it twice.
So you like that I don't enjoy myself?
That's true. At least one of us.
But I'm with you. I think it's a good game.
It is a good game. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, like, it's well-balanced. It's long. I like more kind of like the epic style games where like you're like actually invested in it versus like, oh, let's play it three times in a row because it just feels better when you win.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm going to, you know, build on a grain here a little bit. I think one of the things I like about Civilization is there's so many paths to victory. I feel like most games, it's always victory points really, but, you know, at least some games have like some other winning mechanisms where it's in Civilization, I think there's four?
We have culture, science, war and
economics.
Yeah,
and so yeah, there's four different win conditions, which I think is just really cool, and you can build towards them all independently. You can try and pick a couple. Spreading out evenly is probably not your best bet for winning, but I think it's just cool that you have those options, and they all seem relatively viable, which is cool.
And I think that kind of plays into your second favorite game, Teo. I can't say it right.
Teotihuacan.
It kind of has that same feel to it, where it's heavier, and I think you could there is a few different paths you can take to get the points you need. You know, building the pyramid or going up the dead track and
spoiler alert.
I think for my number two right now, it's a game we've been playing a few times recently, and I've always really liked it. It's Seven Wonders. And the one problem with Seven Wonders, I will say, it can oftentimes feel a bit like multiplayer solitaire. You're just kind of, you know, building up your... For anyone who's unfamiliar, you're basically drafting cards, and you can kind of just ignore everyone else almost and just kind of draft whatever makes the most sense to you. But I think there is enough player interaction with buying resources off your neighbors, and you can kind of look to your neighbors and see, oh, they're building a lot of science, maybe I should deny them the science card, or military, and those sort of things. So I think that there's enough interaction, and I just love the concept of drafting. I've always enjoyed drafting all the way back to, like, Magic the Gathering days, so doing drafts and things. So I think for me right now, it's Seven Wonders. It's also great because it plays up to seven people, which there aren't very many good games in my mind that play that many.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, though, as to why I am not a big fan of Seven Wonders, is I really don't think that there is enough player interaction. That's one big aspect of a game that I really, really need from a game that I like to play a lot.
Right, number one. Grant, what is your number one game right now?
I think my number one game is actually Boss Monster.
Boss Monster?
Yeah, I mean, it's been so long since I played it, but it's a game that I feel like has a lot of, like, hidden combinations that, like, really work well, and you can pay attention, like, to the rest of the players in a constructive way for yourself. I remember being frustrating sometimes, you're, like, looking down, and you're like, I can screw over X person or Y person, and that person cannot do anything about it. But, you know, every game has some aspect like that.
Sure.
Unless it's seven-player solitaire.
Unless it's seven-player solitaire.
So, you know, thinking about this question, I kind of was a little bit surprised with the answer that I kind of came up with.
It's Trivial Pursuit?
As much as I love beating everybody in Trivial Pursuit, no, it's not my favorite. I'm actually going to go with Mysterium. I do really like being the ghost, which I know James over here really doesn't like to do.
I don't dislike it. I just have much more fun being a player.
But I also think it's funny because the game borrows very heavily from Dixit, and I hate Dixit. So yeah, James loves it, but I do not like Dixit, and I think that the mechanics of Dixit merged into what Mysterium is makes it so much better and so much more enjoyable. And again, it's another co-op type game, which is what I really enjoy doing. And
I think that's what it comes down to for you.
What?
It's Mysterium is basically cooperative Dixit, and Dixit's an amazing game, but you just want it to be cooperative, so you've got Mysterium.
Well, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think Dixit is really difficult to play with people who have a varying knowledge of, like, or varying relationships with each other. Like, people who know each other really well versus people who don't know each other very well and you're playing together, I think makes it difficult. And with Mysterium, I mean, you could definitely use if you know somebody really well, you can use that to your advantage, but then it's to everybody's advantage. And it still doesn't prevent you from giving good clues to people you don't know as well.
Mysterium is a lifetime, though. Like, for one group of players. If we played Mysterium, like, 50 times, I think we would just remember which cards matched up with which cards.
I definitely could see that. That's, I think, true. That's why getting the expansions as we play further becomes more important. But yeah, I think I honestly think I have the most enjoyment playing that game. And I like how everyone can win together, so... it might be the reason we have to we put on our divorce papers one day, but, you know, other than that, I really have fun playing that game.
Yeah, Grant alluded to it earlier. I think right now my number one game is Istanbul. I think it's just a great, not quite worker placement, but, you know, just a Euro-style, you know, action game. And I just love, you know, there's not a whole lot of luck to it. You kind of know what you're going to do. You can plan ahead. You can kind of see what other people are working towards. I do wish the game went a little longer. I know Grant and I have talked about this before. It's like if it was just like one or two rubies longer, it might just be a little more satisfying. But yeah, it's just a great game. And again, I mean, it's hard to pick your tops. I'm sure everyone here has like 10 other games I could easily put on their list, but maybe not Grant. But as Grant said, he's new to the world. But yeah, I think, you know, Istanbul is a game we've been playing a lot recently, and just really been enjoying it.
So I have a question for you. Yeah. What is it about Istanbul versus Istanbul the dice game that makes you pick that over the dice game, the original version over the dice game?
Sure. I really like Istanbul the dice game. That said, I think Istanbul the dice game is, it's in my mind, it's a simplified version of Istanbul that's a little bit shorter, where I already feel like Istanbul is a little short, so to make it even shorter is rough, and it just adds a whole bunch of luck to the game with the dice. You know, with the full-blown game, like I say, it's more about, you know, strategy and being able to create the, you know, a good path through the actions to take. Once you've decided what you want to do, you can just do it. You know, there's no luck of the die or anything like that that kind of denies you. So I think it's just the ability to remove some of the luck and to lengthen the game a little bit that makes me like the full-blown game better.
Okay.
And I think with all the, and to be fair, we've pretty much only played so far with the basic setup, but there's like four different ways to set up the game, and so I think there's a lot of variation of the game over time too, which adds a lot of replayability. So I'm just looking forward to it. It's good stuff. Now, a question that I'll go ahead and answer first on this one, because I already have my answer, and I prefaced Grant with this, but I didn't ask Cora earlier, and that is, what is a game, we can go either way on this, what is a game that you like and nobody else likes, or vice versa, a game that you don't like that everyone else does seem to like? So what's your controversial game pick?
I feel like I already answered that.
Oh, Dixit?
Yeah.
No, a lot of people don't like Dixit, but if that, you want that to be your answer, it could be your answer.
I'll think about it.
You think about it.
You go ahead.
I'll go ahead. For me, that game is Munchkin. I've complained about it before. I feel like the world loves Munchkin. There's 300 different reskins of it. You can buy it in every store on the planet. And I know like everyone owns a copy. It's like, you know, you own Monopoly, maybe Catan, next game gets Munchkin. It's like Munchkin is just not that good of a game. It takes forever to play sometimes. There's very little strategy to it in my mind. It's just a war of attrition every time. And it's just dull. I don't know. I'm not a fan of Munchkin. Grant, you got a pick?
I feel like both these people hate me, but I think my favorite game that everyone hates is Risk.
Risk? Oh.
I've only played Risk like once, so I don't know.
I'm sure.
I don't have a strong opinion about it one way or the other.
Yeah. I don't know. I actually don't know how Risk is viewed generically amongst the masses, but yeah, for me, Risk is just not it. To be fair, when I was a kid, and I mean like, you know, 5 years old, my dad and my brother would just destroy me at Risk, no mercy. It's like, oh, dude, I'm 5. I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm 5. I literally have no clue. But they were just taking no mercy on me. And it just kind of brainwashed me from a young age that Risk was not a fun game. But
I think in general, I just have like stupid dice luck. If you haven't played Risk, Risk's just like dice-based combat.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense gets the advantage. And I would have, like, two people in Iceland being attacked by 15 people. And the Icelanders would come out on top.
just hunker down in Australia.
It's like the Spartans of Iceland.
Yeah. It would be like the Battle of Thermopylae. And they would just hold fort. And it would just ruin people's whole games. And it was great for me.
I do remember games like, yeah, if you can like, I think it's Australia is broken up into four territories in Risk.
It is.
There's and like, so it's pretty easy to kind of get like all of Australia, but it's considered like a full continent, so you get the bonus pieces or whatever.
You get two bonus pieces.
Two bonus, whatever. I just remember like, I do remember playing a game where I or someone had just like hunkered down on Australia. It's all they had, but there was just like 100 troops in Australia, and you couldn't go in there. Like, it just, but anyways. All right, Risk, that's fair. I would consider that a controversial pick. Corey, you got something?
Trivial Pursuit.
Well, Trivial Pursuit probably is up there, and I did think about saying that because I always have to play on a team by myself against anybody else who wants to play as a team, all on one other team, and I pretty much always win, so I do like that. But I think the games, and we haven't played very many of them because of this, is any of those games that kind of require you to role play a little bit? So, like, Gloom was the one that I was really excited about. We played once, maybe twice, and James had wanted no more of it. And I don't think we've played since. And there's a few games I just got Snake Oil for Christmas, and I explained the game to James, and he does not want to play at all.
Yeah.
And I'm so those kinds of games, I really like the role play aspect. And even thinking about it, when we play D&D, James is always the dungeon master. He's not role playing.
Yeah.
So I would say probably those games.
I'm not a super creative on the fly kind of guy, so like for me to sit there and just make up something and blah blah blah, I can't do it, and I just get uncomfortable, and I don't enjoy it.
And it's so disappointing because I know Snake Oil, it has been on my wish list for a long time because of how many great reviews there are of it. People love that game, so I'm disappointed that we haven't played it yet. But
all right,
if you're a masochist and still want to have fun, play Mysterium. There's no game that I get that frustrated while playing that I still love playing. It's like Codenames, though. Like, I have fun playing Codenames, but you want to strangle the people you're playing with. It's cooperative.
Anytime. I mean, that's fair, but only from the clue giver perspective. And, you know, I feel like, maybe it's different for me, maybe for you on both sides. I feel like when you're trying to answer based on the clues, like, it's just a puzzle you're trying to figure out. When you give the clue, it's like, oh, well, like, you know what you meant, and you so clearly knew what you meant. It's so obvious when you explain it, but they're just not seeing it, and it's just...
Or when they go the complete opposite way with what you're trying to say.
The worst part is when you guys, like, convince yourself out of the right answer.
I know.
Right. Or if somebody says the right answer, you're like, oh, I think because of this, he's pointing towards the knife. And you're like, that's it. That's exactly what I was going for. And then somebody else is like, I don't know. I think maybe he means this. And everyone else is like, oh, yeah, that makes more sense. Like, you had it. You had it in your hand.
I think it sounds like we're going to have to do an episode on Mysterium.
We'll have to do an episode on, it's just Clue and guess-based games, Codenames and Mysterium.
Decrypto.
And talk about the joy and the pain of those games.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyway, I think that sort of introduces us and some of the things we've been playing recently and like to play, and maybe some of the content we'd like to bring to the show. So unless we have any closing remarks, anyone got anything else they want to say in episode one?
No, I just hope you guys enjoyed it and look forward to episode two.
All right.
Yeah. We'll have fun just talking about meeple and touching meeple. And.
Okay. Well, with that, we are out.